company wants the altar tree, and we want the anthem.
Anthem offertory, okay.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome. This Thursday is the fall equinox, also known as Mabon. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Great. Please open with me in your hymnals, in the gray hardback hymnals, to number 2. It's very easy to find. Number 2 is called Down the Ages We Have Trod. And get ready to trod with us. So here we go, number 2. The choir will sing it through on the first verse and then join us. Please turn to number 346. Come sing a song with me. Number 346.
Oh, Good morning. Welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers. Inspired by love, we transform ourselves and serve others. My name is Jennifer Grant, and I'm your worship associate this morning. I've been a Unitarian Universalist for more than 26 years. I have made the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers my spiritual home since January 2012. For me, the gift of joining a Unitarian Universalist church is sharing your gifts, talents, and joy with the congregation. I love singing with the choir when my voice allows it. and we are always looking for new choir members. You can see there's a lot of room in the choir mat, especially sopranos. Come join us. Our theme for the month of September is faith. I may not consider myself a person of faith. However, I love the idea of faith, especially as it is portrayed in the movies. One of my favorite movies is based on the classic book by W.P. Kinsella, who wrote Shoeless Joe. The movie is, of course, Field of Dreams. And as many of you probably saw via Facebook, W.P. Kinsella died over the weekend. He was 81 years old. I love Field of Dreams because it is magical, and Ray Kinsella does not quite understand why he is supposed to build a baseball field on his farm, but he sees things, he hears things, and he believes things. He has faith. If you build it, he will come. Ray Kinsella does not learn until almost the end of the movie that he is his father. He committed to himself to build the baseball field, even though many people thought he was crazy. Field of Dreams teaches a very important lesson. While you can have blind faith, you have to take action. If you are new to our church, I hope you took some action and stopped by our welcome table. You will find a connection card in the pews in front of you. If you are a guest today, the connection card will give us a chance to connect with you and learn more about you. Please place it in the basket when the offering is taken. We are a very active congregation. Please include your email address in the connection card so you can receive our online newsletter to learn about upcoming church events. I also invite you to come this Wednesday for community dinner and participate in the activities after our social choir. And of course, if you'd like to join the music team, our choir rehearses after our community dinner and Sunday mornings at 9 a.m. Please join us after the service for refreshment, fellowship, and coffee right next door in Hobart Hall. Go out these doors and make a right. For our new guests, please use the large yellow coffee mugs for two reasons. The yellow mugs are much larger and hold more coffee. And so our members and friends can find you easier to greet you in Hobart Hall. We would love to meet you after the service. I would like to invite our chalice lighter to light our chalice. The chalice lighter today is Jersey Blosser. She is 15 years old and an active member of this church. Yay! She is on the worship associate team and likes to help in any way possible. She has been helping out with Wizard Camp for 3 years now. She is a sophomore at South Fort Myers High School, and she is looking into joining many clubs this year. She also loves to help out with her brothers and sisters whenever she's needed. And please rise in body and spirit and join us in singing our covenant. The words are on the screen or in your order of worship.
Join together in singing number 1024, When the Spirit Says Do.
You may join, as you see the words above, in the italics. From the fragmented world of our everyday lives, we gather together in the search of wholeness.
By many cares and distractions, by diverse and selfish ways, we are separated from one another and divided with ourselves.
Yet we know that no branch is utterly severed from the tree of life that sustains us all.
We cherish our oneness with those around us and the countless generations that have gone before us.
We would hold fast to all of the good we inherit, as even we would leave behind us the outworn and the false.
We would escape from bondage to the ideas of our own day and from the delusions of our own fancy.
Let us labor in hope for the dawning of a new day without hatred, violence, and injustice.
Let us nurture the growth in our own lives, love that is shown in the lives of greatness of men and women.
And those in between.
The rays of whose lamps still illuminate our way.
Oh, in this spirit we gather, in this spirit we pray. Amen. Amen.
Good morning, everybody. So I would like to invite all those who are young or young at heart to gather with me for a moment, because we are going to look inside the Wonder Box. Ooh! Ah! OMG! Okay. Okay, my goodness, I needed to stuff the Wonder Box with a few extra things. Okay. Okay, calm, cause easy. I am going to pick someone who is sitting quietly, calmly. Ben, I haven't seen you here for a long time. Would you like to open the Wonder Box? Take a look at what's inside. Just lift right there. Well, look at this. Here, Jersey, can you sit that back there? A bunch of papers. But what's on that paper? What's that a picture of? Dawn?
The chalice.
You guys pass these around. There's not enough for all of you. Sorry. But there are some on the table out to the left in the narthex. You can pick one up before you leave. No, it's okay, Katie. Thank you. So the chalice. We should all be relatively familiar with a chalice in this space, right? Can any of you guys show me where there's a chalice? Yes, Dawn, where is there a chalice? Oh, yes, there happens to be a chalice here. Also, behind you, you will see a bunch of beautiful chalices made by a former member. This, too, was made by a former member. So here's a question for you guys. Does anybody in this group have any idea why we have chalices? Yes? To drink from, interesting. Yes, a chalice is a kind of cup, but this chalice has fire in it. Now, unless you are a particularly skilled circus performer, I don't recommend that. Yes. Ooh, to resemble the fire of our souls. We're getting some deep interpretation. Yeah, Ben. So would you like to hear where the heck this chalice came from?
Yeah.
Of course you would. That's why I'm here this morning. So the chalice originated during World War II. So there was a man named Hans Deutsch, I think I'm pronouncing this correctly, Hans Deutsch, who was a brilliant artist. And when he fled his home of Austria in World War II and went to France, where he created these fantastic cartoons that rather lampooned one Adolf Hitler. And then the Nazis invaded France, so he got out. And he went to Spain, and then eventually he made it to Portugal, where he went to a camp with a bunch of other refugees from the war. And it was here that he met a fellow named Charles Joy, who happened to be part of this Unitarian Service Committee. Sounds like something we might have a hand in, right? And this had been formed in Boston, and it was designed to help refugees of this war. It came out of a need to do good for these people who were suffering so much. And something that Charles had really wanted was a sign for this group. They wanted a symbol that would be as powerful in a good way as that red flag with a white circle and that black swastika was a symbol of so much fear and hatred at the time, right? So our friend Hans Deutsch sat down and he got to working on a symbol for this. And the idea of his symbol was from something very old and very ancient. He looked back at traditions from ancient Greece, ancient Rome, ancient Egypt, the Celts, long, long ago. And something that was very common throughout a lot of old faiths and people was to have holy and sacred oils that you would burn as a sacrificial offering. And he thought, yeah, this is good. And so it is, as he described it, the chalice was filled with the holy oil of sacrifice in the service of others. And that flame was the light in the darkness that comes from the sacrifice in the service of others. And the reason this really stuck, hey, look at you with your own flame. The reason this really stuck was that ours became a faith in the 60s that united with the Universalists, thus our two circles around the chalice, bringing two groups together. And we became this really ragtag group of awesome people who believe totally different things, right? And I don't know if you've ever tried to explain your church to someone, but when I do, it goes like, oh, it's so cool, we'll sit down together on a Sunday morning, and there's Buddhists and Christians and pagans and atheists and Jews, and whoever I'm talking to has a blank stare on their face. What? But how? Because what do you believe in? And where do you go when you die? And the thing is this isn't even a big experiment to find that answer. It's not like we're even trying to come up with that answer as a group and tell you all, like, okay, we figured it out, this is the answer. We are here so that each of us can do what we want in that realm, to figure out our own interpretation of that, and come together and support each other in those differences. This is weird. This is weird. And it's so nice to know that I am not the only weirdo who's into this, but I am surrounded by you beautiful people. And so, this crazy symbol of this holy oil of sacrifice unto others becomes this sort of beautiful sign that unites us. Because whatever you think about the afterlife, whether it exists, how it exists, who it applies to, whatever you think about God, goddess, gods, goddesses, anything, we are all still united by this desire to serve the here and the now. We're all still united, right? And we come together to do good for the world, for now, for the people in it. And it's this one thing that kind of pulls all our faiths together to create this one group of people out of this many varied group of people. So you guys, Katie, Dawn, all y'all, beautiful people, as we leave today, I want you to look around because our campus happens to be covered in chalices. And I would love for you guys to take a look at these chalices. Where do you see them? What do you think about them? How do you relate to them? What does it mean to you, this cup of fire? It's a big question. So as we leave today, I want you to think about that. And these handy little papers, feel free to color and design to take home. It asks you what you light this chalice for. So what is that? I want you to think about that for me, okay? And so with that, we are now going to go to our classes, which is where you will find your beautiful children after service. Thank you all very much.
Of course, you can learn more about some of the happenings in World War II with the Unitarian Service Committee. This is probably the only time I'm going to ask you to watch television. Should you turn on your television sets to watch our WGCU public television on Tuesday night at 9 o'clock, they'll be showing a film called The Sharps War about some brave Unitarians who did great work in bringing refugees over to escape death from the Nazi regime. And that very chalice was used as a symbol of safety and refuge. And so I invite you to tune in, and hopefully you will feel proud of our Unitarian and Universalist heritage. For a time in the 30s, it was a time when anti-Semitism was the norm in the United States, and so it was very countercultural for the Universalist Church of America and the American Unitarian Association, to speak out in solidarity with the Jews of Europe. And so we are invited to be brave in faith. And part of how that works is to be brave with ourselves, and to be brave to take a look with what's going on within. And so as we come together in a time of centering in this sacred space, I invite you to also hold in the mix our member Pat Linhoff, who asks for our prayers of support for her husband, Ted, who had a stroke on Wednesday, and he is in medical care. And yet it is heartening to the both of them to know that all of us are sending our love and our good energy and our prayers. And also, there's so much that we carry. If you read the news this morning, there's so much that remains unspoken within our own hearts. And it's in that spirit that I invite you into prayer or reflection. Holy, holy, holy. We call upon you, you being a name that won't suffice, that's never big enough to hold all that is in this grand reality that is life. Life not only coming in and through each and every one of the human beings in this room, but the life that is verdant and green all around us, that slithers in the black racer, that hops in the bunny rabbit, that's swooped down upon by the great hawk, by the bluebirds that sing a nest in our family gardens, by the seeds that will soon be planted and soon be given life and love and nurture to take root. O you who are part of this great grand story of the universe, anoint us. That the rivers of gladness and mercy would flow down upon us even as we despair and feel grief and loss, or the epic sweep of the generations as we remember our ancestors and the ones who left us too soon. That nothing is lost, that the legacy lives in and through us of all of the life that has coursed not only through human history, but through a greater history, a greater story of the evolution of the cosmos. And so let us sit for a moment in this very grand and ordinary reality that we have been given the gift of life itself. And it may be you or your neighbors around you, beloved, sitting right now, who feel joy. It may be you or your neighbors who feel great sorrow. Find yourselves coming in doubt. Find yourselves needing to come round again to a place of centering and groundedness. Oh, you who gather, who bring that larger, ineffable quality into your midst simply by coming into this space and marking this sacred time. Let us come into the reality of how life calls us, of how the Spirit says, do. Let the people say, amen, and blessed be. For all that is our lives, we come here perhaps invited to recenter again around some sacred intentions of how to live more fully and presently in this life, in the here and now, to be agents of love in this world, to help build a more just and sustainable future for our children and grandchildren. And so you are invited during the ceremony of the Stones of Intention to offer a stone. Perhaps you picked some up on the way in, or you can find them forward or at the sides. And when you offer that stone, perhaps it's a way of offering up the gift of yourself and how you might live more fully into your most sacred promises, promises to yourself, to the world around you, to all of your relations. It is my prayer, it is my great wish that when you offer this stone as a symbol of your sweetest and strongest intentions, that that offering brings you peace. Thank you. May our prayers be heard and our hearts be restored.
Please join together in singing number 128, For All That Is Our Life, and please remain seated. These words are from the heretical Catholic Thomas Merton. We are living in the greatest revolution in history, a huge spontaneous upheaval of the entire human race, not a revolution planned and carried out by any particular party, race, or nation, but a deep, elemental boiling over of all the inner contradictions that have ever been. A revelation of the chaotic forces inside everybody. This is not something we have chosen, nor is it something we are free to avoid.
My reading is from The New Yorker and the Boritz Report from May 12, 2015. While the report is more than a year old, it is even more relevant today. Scientists have discovered a powerful new strain of fat-resistant humans who are threatening the ability of Earth to sustain life, a sobering new study reports. The research conducted by the University of Minnesota identified a virulent strain of humans who are virtually immune to any form of verifiable knowledge, leaving scientists at a loss as to how to combat them. These humans appear to have all the faculties necessary to receive and process information, David Logsdon, one of the scientists who contributed to the study, said. And yet, somehow, they have developed defenses that, for all intents and purposes, have rendered those facilities totally inactive. More worrying, Logsdon said, as facts have multiplied, their defenses against those facts have only grown more powerful. While scientists have no clear understanding of the mechanisms that prevent the fact-resistant humans from absorbing data, they theorize that the strain may have developed the ability to intercept and discard information en route from the auditory nerve to the brain. The normal functions of human consciousness have been completely nullified, Logsdon said. While reaffirming the gloomy assessment of the study, Logsdon held out hope that the threat of fact-resistant humans could be mitigated in the future. Our research is very preliminary, but it's possible that they will become more receptive to facts once they are in an environment without food, water, or oxygen, he said.
Well, that's a cheery report. Isn't that just wonderful? So, human beings, sometimes it seems as if we have trouble staying in touch with reality. Have you ever had been telling a story and you realize that you're telling the story and you hear yourself saying, or maybe I should use I statements. Mm-hmm, I heard that, mm-hmm. I have had this experience where I'm telling a story and I say, you know, and it was just like reality struck me or the truth whopped me upside the head. And that suddenly there's this moment of understanding that I haven't quite been in touch with reality. Have you ever had that conversation where you realize that it's probably the more important thing is to get everybody in the room so that we can all have a shared sense of what reality is? Where there's this story, there's that story. I mean, not that that ever happens to me in church. But creating a notion of shared reality, I mean, in many ways, of course, we're talking about that because that's what religion has done historically. The philosopher Loyal Rue, cool name. What he talks about is how religion has had this capacity and has created a lot of capacity in human beings for, of course, creating meaning. And that we, as a species, of course, had to respond to what was going on around us and create meaning about what our observations were. And those observations would include, I hear thunder, what is the reason for the thunder? And then there's usually a story about the thunder. And that story over time has changed. Perhaps it was, I don't know, who's a thunder god? Thor? Was Odin also? No, okay. The pagans in the room were like, I don't know, not really, Allison. Not really. Zeus! So there are all these stories. Pardon?
Jupiter.
All right, so, okay, thank you. So there were lots of stories and there were these myths created, and it doesn't mean that they lose their meaning and that we're denigrating any of the cultures to say that those are myths. That in fact they created a sense of richness and story that need not be discarded, but it can be viewed instead as something called night language. There's day language and night language, and that night language is sort of when we think about what happens at night when we sleep. dreams. We have these dreams, and there's just, dreams are have this funny quality to them where you can't quite describe it, and that's what night language is what we use to describe what seems ineffable and indescribable. That's night language, according to Michael Dowd, who's someone I'm always quoting from the pulpit, who is an evangelical, now he's calling himself Reverend Reality of the Church of Reality. But what he's doing is he and his wife Connie Barlow have been going around the country for over a decade telling the story of the evolution of the cosmos as a sacred story that we can all share. And so night language and the personification of God, for instance, is the use of night language. When we talk about God and those things, those slippery words that require conversations in coffee hour. And that day language is more factual. And so what Loyal Rue is saying is that religion so often has been creating facts and marrying those, or confusing them, as he says, with values. And that's had some good consequences for human beings of how to make meaning in the world. And over time, however, as we've had more tools and more technology in the modern era, and there's, you know, a lot about that that's not so great. However, what has happened also is this opportunity for scientific inquiry. So I like to think of scientists in many ways as theologians. It's the same thing in terms of making meaning of the world around them and observing and making notes and being curious and wondering. And somehow, you know, we could see them as almost as, you know, natural philosophers, helping create meaning of the realities around us. And so science in many ways doesn't have to be antithetical to religion. In fact, science can be blended and mixed in with our own understandings of what reality is. Part of what I've been inspired by in Michael Dowd's thinking is that we are invited to come back into right relationship with reality. And so he calls himself now, he was called by someone else, Reverend Reality. And so he's embraced that term, and I really like that about what are the opportunities for us to come home to reality. So we hear the story of coast human beings, you know, when we have no breath left, no oxygen, no water, maybe we'll figure out like, oh, maybe this climate change thing is really happening. Maybe that's really real. There's a fellow by the name of Marshall Shepard from the American Association for the Advancement of Scientists, AAAS, and he and a lot of other scientists, didn't catch that. And he and a lot of other scientists have gotten together and created a whole website called What We Know. And what he says is, you know, I'm someone who's a climate scientist, and I'm telling you, if I told you that there was a 97% chance of rain today, what would you leave the house with? That's the reality, 97%. 97% of scientists, especially our climate scientists, can verify that climate change is real. Now, I know I'm preaching to the choir here. But that's important to do, is to remind ourselves that there is a reality to come home to, and to remind the people around us of this reality. Now, I think it's easy sometimes to consider this notion of climate change, to sort of let it just go to the wayside. You know, we've got our day-to-day living, we've got the grind. And yet, coming together here, we have the opportunity to center again around that which is most sacred for ourselves. And what I would like to posit is to share some of Michael Dowd's ideas that what he likes to call God is reality with a personality. What would it be like, okay, and this is for my theist friends in the room especially, to consider God is reality. And I'm going to read from you from a Unitarian theologian who died in 1994, a white guy named James Luther Adams, who I love. And he writes, "Whatever the destiny of the planet or of the individual life, a sustaining meaning is discernible and commanding in the here and now." Now, this is also for my humanist friends. God, or that in which we may have faith, is the inescapable, commanding reality that sustains and transforms all meaningful existence. It is inescapable, for no one can live without somehow coming to terms with it. It is commanding, for it provides the structure or the process through which existence is maintained and by which any meaningful achievement is realized. This reality that is dependable and in which we may place our confidence is then not humanity, nor is it mere projection of human wishes. It is a working reality that every person is destined to live with. So I think this is an interesting notion of God, as that something bigger, that transcendent peace, and something that that redefines faith in living in right relationship with reality. So for me, I'm someone who will often, I'm going to out myself, if you have to give me a label, I'd say I'm a religious naturalist. So the whole idea is that this whole universe and the great story of this universe is enough. So for me personally, I don't necessarily lean into any sense of the supernatural, because, frankly, the idea that there are parallel universes that exist in the natural world, that's blowing my mind enough. Like, that's enough. That doesn't have to exist outside. And for me, the fact that something might exist outside, and what Michael Dowd and other evolutionary spirituality thinkers are telling us, is that if we continue to place God outside of reality, God outside of nature, and you can replace the word, you can say goddess or whatever, but if we place all of that outside of nature, then it doesn't actually honor nature. So if there are people who are worshiping and honoring God, but it's outside of nature, well then who the heck cares about what's going on here and now on this earth? In addition, the invitation is to consider faith beyond belief. And this is at the core of Unitarian Universalism. This is what our Unitarian Universalist Association president, Peter Morales, tells us, that we have the opportunity to love beyond belief. That it's about where we place our confidence, where we place our love, where we dive into our most sacred intentions again and again. That's what we're up to here, not creating dogma that takes us out of relationship with reality. The science fiction writer who's often quoted by Michael Dowd, he writes, "Reality is that which, when you stop believing it, doesn't go away." That's powerful. Because there's a whole lot of reality going on right now, and it's not going to go away. And there are opportunities, and I see this congregation racing to the edge with where reality is taking us and making choices about how to consciously live in this world in right relationship to reality. Getting hands in the dirt in the back, participating in our Interfaith Justice Ministry Network, that though it's not the platform of Lee Interfaith for Empowerment, I feel like so much of that work is about being in right relationship with people across racial and economic and theological lines, bringing people together to do the common work of justice. That's at the cutting edge of where reality is taking us. In the movement for Black Lives, that's at the cutting edge of where reality is inviting us to go and to make choices about how to consciously dig in and be in relationship, right relationship, with these movements of reality. The reality of the chickens that come home to roost in this nation, where gross national product is valued more than gross national happiness. And so the opportunity in this congregation and coming home to reality is to begin to sit with how to honor and to revere reality. That's not about belief. It's not about dogma of, like what our director of religious education was saying, about we don't tell you what the answers are. But we do try to journey shoulder to shoulder together. Hello? So for me, the opportunity for faith, it used to be for me that it was about, that faith was this optimistic journey of coming to the edge and making this choice to fly, coming to the edge of what I can see, what I can know, what I can understand. And now for me, perhaps as informed by evolutionary spirituality, by scientists, by eco-activists, perhaps it's really about coming into what is real. That's not just what scientists are telling us. That's what mystics tell us. The late Catholic Cardinal Bernardin, he said, contemplation is taking a long, loving look at what is real. And I'm not saying go pick up your phones and read Google News. It's about come in here and centering in. Take a long, loving look at what is real within, within your heart, within your mind. And then taking those moments to have real conversations with people about what's really going on in the world, what's really going on, and are we in right relationship with reality? Are we in right relationship with our earth and all people? This is part of what's called by Michael Dowd the evidential reformation. That we can have a factual faith, a sacred realism that takes into account the reality of our time, that revelation and miracles didn't just happen sealed up in stories in one book, but that the miracle is the ongoing participation in the divine creative process, that sustaining, transforming reality of which every dear one of you are a part. Without you, you, all of you, and your voices, we start to lose touch of reality. And so let us co-create and collaborate with that reality so that we may bring a more sustainable and just world for our future generations. My friends, I think it's time to say that you are religious. It's time to embrace that we can organize ourselves as a religious body and be religious, because we can treat religion as if it mattered for the here and now and for the future generations. The opportunity in coming together and centering around what is real and then acting out of that reality, we redefine what faith is. We move in faith together, a factual faith, a faith to work by, as the words of Errol Collymore, a faith to live by. And so let us companion one another as we co-create with God reality. Blessed be.
Please rise and embody your spirit as we join together in singing number 1028, The Fire of Commitment.
When we live with deep assurance of the flames that burn within, then our promise finds fulfillment and our future can begin. Here at the Unitarian Universalist Church of Fort Myers, we give generously with love to our church, and we donate all of our undesignated funds collected during their offering to a different charity every month. During the month of September, our community sharing recipient is Visuality Incorporated. The mission of Visuality is to promote the health, safety, and personal growth of lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, and questioning youth. Visuality strives to end all forms of violence, harassment, and discrimination based on real or perceived sexual orientation or gender identity. Visuality is very close to our UUCF community. Our members Arlene Goldberg and Katie Romano Griffith have served on our board, and our own member Allison Carvel was part of, at the time, Edison College, Gay Straight Alliance that raised money to help establish Visuality's nonprofit status. If you want to give to our church community, you may write a check and put UUCF in the memo line, or you may put your cash in this yellow envelope and say donation for UUCFM or donation for the community sharing. As I mentioned before, all undesignated funds will go to Visuality. Don't forget to put your connection card in the offertory basket as it passes by so we can all stay connected. The morning offering will now be given and graciously received.
As we gather the dreams of our imaginings we make this generosity real in the world. I invite you to rise in body or spirit as we speak the unison words and receive your generosity today. By the work of our hands and the work of our hearts, our love is made real. May we be grateful for all that is given and grateful for all that is shared. And now let us sing Carry the Flame as we extinguish the chalice. Dear ones, go forth faithfully, living into the reality that is now and co-creating a future that is love, equity, and peace. We are the ones. Blessed be.
The choir will sing the first verse, then please join us on the second.